I'd like now to welcome Andy Otto. He is Executive Director of the Santa Fe Watershed Association. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you very much.
It's great to have you, and we're going to talk in a little while about the Love Your River Day. But first, we wanted to ask you, what is the Santa Fe Watershed Association? What do you do?
Great. So we're a nonprofit membership organization that has been part of the Santa Fe River, shall we say, since 1997. We have several programs that you may have heard about, the Adopt a River program, which you'll see the signs all up and down the river where different reaches of the river are actually adopted by different organizations. And part of that is being stewards of that section of the river, which is kind of cool. So what it amounts to is that we, five or six times a year, they organize volunteers to go out and clean up debris along the river and sort of check it out for everyone and report back on how it's doing. So that's the Adopt a River program. We also do a My Water, My Watershed program, which is an outdoor education program in the upper watershed, and that's in conjunction with the city of Santa Fe, where we take out as many fifth graders as we can possibly find in the city of Santa Fe and take
fifth
them up.
Fifth graders.
That seems to be a really good age for environmental education. It's just sort of in between when things are happening for them. So it's fun. And Eileen Everett's in charge of that program. And she's been doing this for 3 or 4 years now and is very skilled at it, taking the kids up there. But part of the program is classwork before they go up into the upper watershed. And then, of course, it's during. And then there's the follow-up classwork. And that's the key. It's not just going up on a field trip and looking at what's happening up there, but it's before, during, and after, if you will.
Yeah.
So that's a big program. Another program we run is the Climate Masters classes. We've started that about 2 years ago, and we're doing another one this coming April. The intent of the Climate Masters program is to train different people on different aspects of what's going on with the environment and our river locally in Santa Fe watershed. And then it encourages them to contribute after the class 30 hours at least of volunteer time to help with a project. And they name their own project. And to give you an idea, there's a group called Got Soul that you may have heard about. And they were a result of the Climate Masters class a year and a half ago, which is kind of neat.
What do they do?
So, well, Got Soul has been working on one of their projects was to put photovoltaic cells on the roundhouse.
Nice.
That didn't quite go for several reasons. They got very close to it. Monies were appropriated, and then things changed. But they are still working on creating a photovoltaic field in the Capitol grounds, which is kind of neat. So then we have the Adopt a River, as I mentioned, and the upper watershed. The other things that we're working on, so you know, is just general advocacy for the Santa Fe River and the Santa Fe River watershed. We're working with a community collaborative group down in La Cienega to try to help them on organizing what they feel is needed by the county and by different agencies. Down there, they're so many different groups all feeding in, including the city of Santa Fe and the county of Santa Fe, and the airport has property down there, and BLM. And so we're all trying to kind of figure out how to best manage that stretch of river.
It does seem like a lot of what's going on in New Mexico environmentally is about different landowners learning to talk to each other and find their common goals.
Yeah. And that's it. And what we try and do is be the voice of the river and the river watershed at that table, because everybody does have such a different concept of what's needed in any given area.
So let's talk for a little bit about the Santa Fe River. Rivers are, in a way, kind of living things with a history and a life. And the Santa Fe River has a long life that has all sorts of things that have happened to it, like dams and diversions and drought and wildlife coming and going. Tell us a little bit about the kind of history of this river.
And people coming and going,
too.
Yeah. So, I mean, the history, of course, goes back the millennia, if you will, to the ancient ones, and then the Pueblo, and then the Spanish, and then the Americans. So I won't go through that as much as the general concept of the river and the river watershed. The watershed starts up in the upper watershed, and basically that's the reservoir, if you will, which is the snowpack initially. Now what's happened is that we've created two reservoirs, and previously, I mean, there have been more than that, 2 mile reservoir and the rock dam reservoir, but those are our main ones now. And so what they've done with those reservoirs is use them strictly for drinking water for domestic use. So what was a monumental piece of legislation from the city of Santa Fe 2 years ago in 2012 was to delegate 1,000 acre feet as environmental flow for the river. This is a big deal. This is something that you don't see in many rivers across the country where you have limited water resources like we do.
So it basically, instead of taking water out, that we're actually putting water into the river, designating
into the channel
that it must go into the river.
Yeah, exactly. And this is huge because it's not just the surface river that is part of the whole complex. It's the watershed that goes with it, the upper watershed, the lower watershed, and also the aquifer. And to connect that river to the upper watershed and to connect that river to the aquifer are huge challenges for not just Santa Fe, but for all rivers across the West. And so that's our challenge, is to try and make sure that those are being considered. So instead of just channelizing a river, which does great to get water through an area very quickly, like through downtown Santa Fe, all of a sudden if you start creating meanders and start letting the water infiltrate into the aquifer and recharge the aquifer, that's a big deal.
How does that exactly work? I mean, we have rainfall, snowfall, runoff, surface water, aquifers, and there's this interrelationship is something mm-hmm. that we don't necessarily understand that well.
Yeah, it's like a Georgia O'Keeffe painting, you know. That's exactly it. And of course, measuring the aquifer is not as easy as measuring a surface reservoir.
Right.
So those are the challenges.
Because it's way deep down, and
yeah, it can go down, and there are different pockets, and there are different side canyons, if you will, and things like that.
It's not just a tube underground.
Yeah, exactly. Or this big pool or tank or something like that. But aquifers have a lot of advantages to surface water that they don't have the evaporation loss that surface waters have. So that's why, to me, aquifers are really a potential incredible source of water for us all for the future. It's a storage area.
But they get recharged.
Correct.
By the rain, by the surface.
Yes. Yes.
And if they don't get recharged, then there
yeah.
goes your aquifer.
Correct. And those show up in things like the approximately 1,000 wells in the basin, in the watershed. All of a sudden, the well owners are saying, gee, I got to dig my well a little deeper because the aquifers. And that's how it usually shows up. People are concerned about that. And also, what you want to look at is the recharge versus the discharge, if you will, from the aquifer. And so those are the challenges also. We can do that with a reservoir. You can look out and see the level pretty easily. But with an aquifer, it's not quite as easy to do that. So figuring out how the metrics of an aquifer are very challenging. And they're kind of expensive, to be honest with you.
If you have an aquifer and human beings have no impact, like there's, for whatever reason, there's just nobody there, what is the natural discharge and recharge of an aquifer?
Yeah. It would equate to the surface flow of that particular river or stream. So the aquifer, on all the classic model, shall we say, the aquifer level is the same as the stream level. And so you see that with these classic drawings. But what happens when you start drawing down the aquifer is all of a sudden the stream level is higher than the aquifer, which means that you start losing water from the stream into the aquifer, because that's the natural thing for it to flow downhill, if you will. And then also with that, you start, when you're drawing down the aquifer, you just don't know how far you're going.
How can the stream level be the same as the aquifer when the stream is on the surface and the aquifer is underground?
Yeah. Well, it's not, technically. And that's where I see the classic drawing. If you look at the V of a stream bed and then the water surface level, that top water surface level in classic drawings is where the aquifer is. So it's still below the banks of the stream, if you will, but it's only down maybe a couple of feet from the surface of the soil. When you start drawing that down, all of a sudden, it's, of course, going to be below the surface of the stream, and so the stream has a natural tendency to start recharging the aquifer, which is its natural want.
And so it recharges it just simply through the water going through the dirt, through the soil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Infiltration. Yeah.
So when we see, for example, rivers where they've channelized it and made cement and things like that, you have no infiltration.
Correct. And that's exactly where the issues come into play. And sometimes that, you know, is required for different uses. Usually it's to transport water, and you'll see canals and some acequias. But the catch is it's all part of the same system. The surface flow and the aquifer and the watershed are all one and the same in so many ways. And so when you start changing one, it's going to change the other. So back to the Watershed Association, what we're looking at is, we've done that in Santa Fe for the last 200, 400 years. And so what we want to do is try to get that balance back a bit.
We're talking to Andy Otto of the Santa Fe Watershed Association. So we talk about the Santa Fe watershed, which is basically you've got mountains and valleys and the water that flows down into our reservoir. That's like how you define the watershed. But the watershed is also,
remember the watershed is defined as an area of land that all drains to a common point.
Right.
And a lot of times people will say a common river or stream, but it's actually a point is that official definition. And that point for our watershed is down in Cochiti, where it hits the Rio Grande.
Okay. But the Santa Fe watershed is also part of a greater regional watershed.
Yeah, Rio Grande watershed, if you will. And then you have the north and the middle and the south Rio Grande. And you can keep the concept going, if you will, to, you know, the classic, divide between the Atlantic and Pacific kind of continental divide kind of ideas. Those are the ultimate big watersheds in North America.
Right.
But the watershed concept is an important one to keep because of, even if it's, say, the Rio Grande watershed, which we're a part of, anything, again, that happens in that watershed affects another part of the watershed and affects the river and affects the aquifer. So any time that someone puts in a diversion dam anywhere along the upper Rio Grande, it's going to affect our watershed to some degree. And, of course, we know that with so many of our different diversions and Central Arizona projects and things that have happened in the Southwest over the last 40 years.
Now, what are some of the dangers and threats in the Santa Fe watershed?
Well, besides the ultimate threat of some sort of toxic chemical getting into the watershed, and that was Virginia 2 weeks ago now, those are horrific sort of examples. But probably the main thing is to be able to inventory and monitor our all of our waters. When I say that's the surface water and the aquifer, so that we know if we're depleting it or not. I suppose that to me the hardest thing would be that instance where you turn on the tap and no water comes out, and no one wants that. So that's the ultimate. But then the other side of it is, too, if you're monitoring the water and you've got a really good handle on how much is there, then all of a sudden you can say, okay, we can allocate X gallons for the river, and we can allocate X gallons for the aquifer and X gallons for the city use. Yeah.
What role do drought and climate change play and the fire danger that comes with them?
Yeah, that's part of the monitoring in my mind, but it's exactly it. So the classic example is that if you have a drought situation, then the wise user, if you will, reduces his water consumption. That's hard for us to do because it's so diverse over the city of Santa Fe. So what we have to do is work on conservation constantly. And the Southwest U.S., I think, is in many ways so much better prepared to do that. And we've done that as a city over the last 20 years. Conservation efforts have been very successful in Santa Fe. So being able to reduce consumption very quickly or on an ongoing basis is the way to treat any kind of drought conditions. And historically, we've had these terrible droughts too, and the classic thing was for ancient civilizations in the Southwest as they moved on. We're kind of stuck here. We tend to have staked our claim to this valley. So our other option then is to try and make wise use of the water we've got.
Now, there's always this problem that has come up a number of times in conversation about water is, okay, we install low-flow toilets and we use water conserving appliances and so on. And as a city, we save a whole bunch of water and then more people get development permits because of the water we've saved. So we're not really saving water.
Well, yeah, I can't speak to that because, again, so often, you know, the city has the calculations and they choose as they choose. And the planners, I shouldn't say the city, but the planners do and the developers do. But that's the key. If we all had a number that we agreed on for the number of gallons, if you will, or acre feet in the watershed, that goes a long way toward future planning. So that's, again, what we're at the Santa Fe Watershed Association working on, is trying to promote an accurate and ongoing assessment of the water in the watershed so that we know.
What are the best practices that people use? I mean, you have studied watershed management. What does good watershed management look like?
Yeah, so that's a good, and it's back to your other question too, which I didn't answer on fire and fire suppression. So a couple of ideas with that. So good management starts in the, if you want, the surface of the upper watershed. It's managing the trees and the brush and the wildlife to maximize infiltration into the soil to reduce erosion.
How do you do that?
Well, it's thinning practices are one way to do that. Another way is, well, that's actually probably the main way, but there's different ways that you can create check measures to reduce any kind of sheet erosion going on. Usually those are the result of other practices, like overgrazing. Protecting the soil, to me, is sort of the root of all that. If you keep the soil there, then that's a good thing. Keep it out of the reservoirs, then that's the start of that. So those are some of the initial sort of practices for fire suppression and watershed management that we go on. And then we get down to really working with the flow regimes of the river and those sort of issues, and trying to work on the water quality and monitoring that quality. And monitoring the quality will often tell you, of course, the health of the watershed. So that's the idea.
How is our water quality in the Santa Fe watershed?
It's good, and it there's no reason why it shouldn't be. Yeah, we get nice snow melting and creating this wonderful water we drink.
You talked a moment ago about fire suppression, and we have done many shows on the long-term problems with fire suppression, which is that too much fuel builds up, and then you get these gigantic, catastrophic, everything-killing crown fires and stuff like that.
Yeah, and those are concerns for everybody. No one wants to see any kind of catastrophic fire, for sure. And so that's where we think thinning can really be a key. And I say thinning, there's so much more than just taking out trees or brush or things like that. But it's not just in the upper watershed. It's all the arroyos also, all the neighborhoods. If you look out at your own yard and you try and take a look at what we call defensible space, that's part of the thinning process. And then protecting your own soil on your own property. keeping it there as opposed to having it flow down the arroyo during the monsoons. Those are all keys to fire suppression also.
Well, that's something I was going to ask you, is what the role of the homeowner is in protecting our watershed.
Yeah, and that's it. I think I call it protecting your own soil, you know, or protecting your own dirt. But that's the idea, is to try to look at your own parcel, your own lot. We call it backyard conservation, and seeing what you can do to make sure that you're not losing soil off your property. And it can be as simple as mulch, and it can be as simple as doing some trimming and some thinning.
And planting.
Yeah, that's, of course, the key. I always think of the mulch side, but the planting. And the reason you do mulch is so that you can get some native plants and grasses to come in.
It's hard to plant here.
Yeah, it's hard to plant everywhere.
It's hard to even dig the dirt to plant something in it.
Yeah, but 400 years ago, we didn't have soil erosion problems except for catastrophic events in the watershed. And that's a summarization. It's not, I haven't cataloged that per se. But the idea being is that it's human activities that have often caused the increased chance for erosion. And so therefore we need to actively get out and plant. And of course using native plants, because they're used to our drought cycles that are normal parts of the environment.
We're talking to Andy Otto of the Santa Fe Watershed Association. So when we look at climate change and we look at the drought that we're in, it seems like a kind of one-way street that has no end in sight. I mean, it seems like a long-term process. And so adapting not only as individuals and homeowners and so on, but as a city, as a county, as a state, to this new set of conditions is a big challenge.
Yes. Well, and of course, when you look over geologic time, we've been emerging from the last ice age for the last 10,000 years. And it is a challenge. And the biggest lesson I've gotten from my experience has been to just count on it. It's in the Southwest. When we get those big rain years, great. Then we can all go swimming. But count on a reduced supply of water over time. And as long as we count on that and plan for that, then hopefully we won't be caught short.
Do you think there is a kind of benefit to the greater good of people doing, for example, water catchment in their own houses?
Yeah, I think so. There was the Senate Bill 16 that Peter Wirth has submitted to this legislature to provide tax credits for expenditures by the homeowner on different cistern systems and catchment systems. And they make a lot of sense. Again, instead of the water flowing off your roof, flowing, hitting the soil, carrying the soil into the arroyo and on down, and the sediment just builds up as far as it can and keeps moving downstream over the years. If you can keep the water on your property to reuse as for your landscaping and your vegetation, it keeps people from having to use drinking water, if you will, to water their plants. And so that's the to me a big advantage to it. But also it's a timed release situation. When you have that water flowing off the roof and that you know 2-hour storm that happens, and there's a lot of power in those and a lot of water in those, and to all of a sudden to slow that down and hold on to it and then release it slowly over the course of maybe the next week, it does wonders.
Now, when you look at, you're in school and you see the cycle of water and you see the clouds and the evaporation and the rain and the mountains and the snow melt, and you start to get a sense of what these cycles, these natural cycles are. And then we're living and we get water out of a faucet and then it goes down a pipe to somewhere. How is that cycle, like where does our city water go, our sewage and our shower water and all that?
Yeah, of course it goes down to the treatment plant downstream of the airport and then back into the river, which is kind of the way of the world. It should be. So it still maintains that river system, if you will. It's still recycled water, although the middle channel, which is the part that we all live along, is deprived of using that water for also, I'm going to say aesthetic reasons, but also for recharging the aquifer. The only water that's really lost to the system is the water that evaporates and then goes off to the east. And so that's the challenge also for us. And there's no way to really capture that, of course, or recapture that. Hopefully we get recharged on that from water that has evaporated from the Pacific Ocean and flows over us. So that's the thinking.
So when the water goes out of our sinks and toilets and the places we've washed our paintbrushes with mineral spirits and all that, and it gets cleaned and goes back into the river, is it really clean?
Well, it's supposed to be, and I believe it is. I've been down below the treatment plant along the river 2 weeks ago, and it's pretty good water, I believe, and so that's the idea. And this, I think the city of Santa Fe, again, has done a great job with their water treatment.
Mm. Now, you are, as we've been talking about, the Santa Fe Watershed Association going to have an event coming up, and this is an exciting annual event called Love Your River Day. It's Saturday, the 15th of February, from 9:30 in the morning till noon at Frenchie's Field is where it all starts. What happens?
Right. So what we do is, it's basically a day to go out and help clean up the debris on the river and in the river. One day, volunteers will meet, and we'll have hot cocoa and donuts and pastries, shall we say, and all get together and spread out along the river. Everyone will be given a different reach, not every person, but every group or every groupings. We'll be given a different reach of the river to go and collect garbage and debris along that stretch of river. So in one day, probably about 2 hours worth of time is all it takes for any particular group, the river will be cleaned up. And that's kind of neat. And the one reason to do it now is low flows, and so you can actually get into the riverbed, and that's a big part of it, so that it's safe and it's also accessible. So that's part of why we do it now. Another thing, it's kind of a community event to go out, and everyone goes out and on that day, and we all share in helping the river.
And I imagine it's kind of fun.
It's fun. It's just, you know, it's kind of like we're all together for a united cause, and that's cleaning up the Santa Fe River.
Do you see wildlife sometimes?
Oh, sure. Yeah. As you know, I mean, wintertime, so many of the critters are hibernating, but so many are out and about, and that's always the fun part of it too. And again, it's part of that connect to the river that we're so much promoting. The river can be a living river. It's doable, and for sure it's not something that is going to be an impossible dream. And part of that is having everybody know where it is and how it is.
Andy Otto is Executive Director of the Santa Fe Watershed Association. They are on the web at santafewatershed.org. And if you want to sign up for Love Your River Day, you can RSVP to SFWA Stewards at santafewatershed.org, or you can just go on the website, or you can even give them a call at 820-1696. Andy Otto, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
You bet. Thank you.